Welcome to episode 44 of Digital Outbox. Hello, once again. My name's Ian, and joining me this week is Christopher.
Hello.
Evening, Chris.
Ian.
Yes, I just felt I should give you the full title for a change.
Thank you, every syllable, well catered for.
Everyone, Christopher. I think that just sets the tone.
It does. I'm going to try very well, try hard to hold my tongue, but I'm feeling in a ranty mood, I'm afraid. I don't know if that's an I'm afraid statement, or actually it'd be good for the listeners, but... I wish I was better at ranting, because that's what I feel like.
It depends if you're going to rant sense. If you're just going to rant nonsense, if you're just going to be a David Cameron and just rant, or probably want a George Osborne and rant nonsense, then that's not so good.
I'll try not to be George Osborne. I've got images of cats now. I don't know.
Cats?
Don't worry.
Right. So this is, I should warn everybody, this has the potential to be a very long podcast, considering there's only two of us.
There's only two of us, and the show notes are how long? About, if it was A4 pages, it would probably be four of them. And that's not just because I've put big red letters in certain places.
I have added lots of show notes this week. Let's crack on.
Yep.
And some politics to kick off with. So it was wash-up week last week as Labour tried to rattle through some of their policies before they leave. The broadband tax has gone. Now, considering that was one of their kind of showpiece, and this is how it's going to fund the future of broadband in Britain, it's quite a surprise.
I'm surprised it's gone, but I don't really care. Although we all thought, or it seemed like we all thought it was a good idea, do we really care? I mean, the Conservatives are saying, it's like this massive U-turn and all those kind of things. What a victory it is for consumers. But £6 a year, grand scheme of things, it ain't that.
It's not a lot.
It would never have done what it was wanting to do anyway, properly, although it would have gone some way to helping, I imagine. But
it was just, and as you said, in the grand scheme, I don't think it's going to make a big difference. I think a lot of the companies had quickly worked out anyway. It's not a lot of money per year it was going to bring in. Certainly not enough to fund a revitalised broadband network in the UK.
No, there needs some serious, serious investment. And to be honest, governments are going to have to cover that themselves, so they'll have to find a way of taxing it somewhere. So this big success by the Conservatives, rubbish.
Rather more concerning in the wash-up last week was the digital bill has been passed.
Yeah, that little thing that no one's got an issue with, no problems.
This made my blood boil, I must admit.
I could tell from the way you were writing.
I think what annoyed me the most was I watched Parliament. I watched it for like the 2 or 3 hours as it unfolded, and I was agog at the lies that were getting spoken in there. It was just, we're all talking bill.
Is it
bill.
Lies, or just does it show how they don't really understand the topic?
Oh, I don't know. That I was getting annoyed. I was getting really annoyed, and I think what was making it worse was the folk that was following on Twitter were also getting annoyed.
Yeah,
and it was just you were powerless. There's absolutely nothing you can do to stop these guys talking nonsense for hours and then having a crazy vote. So, digital bill, just in case people have been hiding under a rock, we've mentioned it enough. The digital economy bill was 43 different laws, or 45 different laws, all around the digital economy, so TV, radio, and internet, and gaming. So I think that was the main areas it was covering. And scarily for me, it was actually, from a law point of view, it has fairly far-reaching implications, some of the things that are now in law.
Yes, so certainly wider than the scope of, what we're led to believe it's supposed to cover.
Yeah, so it got through a Lords vote, was it a week and a half ago? Mm-hmm. It was, the second reading took place, it was last Tuesday night, the third reading was Wednesday, and it finally got voted in through the Lords on Friday. Now, a couple of laws get dropped last minute. Again, seemingly this is par for the course and part of the wash-up. Government wants to get through certain things, and it then starts the horse trade with the Conservatives mostly, and sometimes with the Lib Dems, and taking certain things out and adding things in to sweeten things up and get things passed. One of the things that was dropped was Clause 43, which actually didn't get as much press as the kind of three strikes rule and some of the website blocking. But Clause 43 was crazy. Did you know anything about this?
Yeah, so this is the clause there. If you say you'd found a photo online somewhere and you thought to yourself, oh, I can't find or can't be bothered to find the owner of that photograph, I'll tell you what, I'll use it.
Crack on.
I'll just use it for my multinational, you know, billion-dollar ad campaign. And yeah. I'll tell you what, I'll put some money in the central pot. So if the owner of that photograph happens to notice that I'm using it, there's some money available, but nothing to do with what they wanted to sell their photo for, you know, an amount agreed on by some spod somewhere.
It was unbelievable. So what was interesting was photographers around the country had obviously kicked off a bit of a campaign, didn't get as much press, but it looks like they were far more successful than the actual internet people were in getting the other laws.
And you know why? Because it's an easier topic to understand, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, most MPs have probably taken a photo every now and then, you know.
Yeah, but it was been the actual, I can't even believe it got to the point of people voting on something like this. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I can't find somebody can't find who owns a photo and hence I'll just use it.
It wasn't just that though, it was not just can't find, but can't be bothered to find, it seemed as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was quite interesting was, I don't know if it was the day before or the day after, both parties used the Gene Hunt image and the Audi image in party political photos and poster campaigns. Neither of them had seeked any permission from the BBC to use it.
Mm.
And it just sums up the lack of understanding. It's just this concept of, I just use whatever I like and just put it out there.
This is where it's confusing as well, because the bit that we're annoyed about is the fact that, you know, where copyright, I don't know, I mean, if I can't be asked to find the copyright owner of, a movie, do I just put a couple of quid or a bit of music? Do I just put a couple of quid in a pot somewhere? Because actually that makes more sense on those levels.
Yeah. And when you play that back, when you look at some of the conversations, so some of the debate that then took place on Tuesday around the digital economy bill was absolutely ridiculous. Some people just spouting nonsense. The guy that was actually I'm trying to find the right name for Stephen Timms. He started talking about how some people in the House were acting as Darth Vader and other people were acting as like Yoda. And you're like, what? You know, it was, and I was watching it live and I still didn't know which side he supported after his 10-15 minutes spouting off.
And especially when they only had, like, was it 2 hours to talk?
They had 2 hours, and well, I think there was 3 hours. In the first 2 hours, they spent discussing one amendment.
Yeah.
And then because we're running out of time, they said, well, all the other 44 measures, we'll just need to now discuss them in the next half hour.
It's kind of an eye-opener as far as, you know, this shows how some, you know, laws, if someone... people, you know, someone like Mandelson gets an idea or wants to do something, laws do gain this momentum, which even with some resistance from people and general public, and I imagine MPs don't often get letters through
about
things like this, and they clearly did in this case. But it's the momentum, and it can't be stopped.
what was quite interesting was that one MP did actually state that he'd got quite a number of letters, but obviously from people who didn't understand.
So the people writing him letters didn't understand.
People writing him letters, they don't understand.
I think they understand
MPs do.
That all too well what this is, you know.
Yeah. What was quite interesting was one of the clauses was Clause 18. High Court can grant injunction forcing ISPs to block access to online locations if a substantial portion of that location infringes copyright. ISPs must pay copyright owners court fees unless in exceptional circumstances. So that was withdrawn, but separately. There was a separate clause added into, I think it was Rule 8, which I'm just trying to find, which it was replaced with an amendment to Clause 8 of the bill. The new clause allows the Secretary of State for Business to order the blocking of a location on the internet which the court is satisfied has been, is being, or is likely to be used for in connection with an activity that infringes copyright. So even if they slightly suspect that a site might be infringing copyright.
If the site's a little bit were, a little bit way, don't leave it there. I'll nick it, mate.
Yeah. So that was fine. That is seemingly accepted as that's fine.
And you just start to
think about it. So an example was one of the guys who was a bit more switched on gave an example of WikiLeaks does host copyrighted material.
Yep.
And that could now be blocked. And you think pressure from America?
And as soon as America or UK government don't want you to find something out, which is the whole point of WikiLeaks in the first place, surely, they can block it, or they can request ISP block it.
So do you think they'll block Dropbox, Windows Live?
These are the things we just don't know, but that's what it could all mean. Yeah, anything I can share a file with you.
YouTube, Vimeo, Flickr. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit I don't get. Where does this stop and start? It's so grey, and none of that really got discussed at all.
And the only way that things like that end up getting ironed out and the boundaries set is in the court. The majority of people who this bill affects, so that's everyday users, have not got the resources to go and fight those corners. So it's never going to be settled in a way that's good for us.
So the second reading went on for quite a number of hours. Pretty poor. The one that annoyed me the most was the third reading. It was almost empty. It was about 20 MPs here debating it. 2 hours given to debate the amendments to the 50 clauses. As I said, they glossed all of them really quickly.
Mm.
And then the bit that was galling the most was it was vote time. And all of a sudden, 200 MPs turned up and voted.
Yeah, so they hadn't been in at all to do with the debate.
No, hadn't been in. Welcome to
politics, basically.
And this is it. This is what sums it up. This is what happens day in, day out in the parliament. And because, I certainly don't pay attention enough, and I'm going to hold my hand up, but watching that debate, seeing the ill-informed and also the people that have obviously been paid to lie, and nobody can actually point out the lies, but nobody can actually turn around and argue. And then seeing basically a party whip then saying get in there and vote, and seeing 100 Labour guys turn out of nowhere and start voting for it, absolute crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, disgrace. Like I say, we're getting a bit annoyed by the fact that this is being put through the wash up rather than going for further debate or consultation or whatever. But the fact is, they washed up, I don't know how many bills. They covered, maybe up to 20 or something.
Yeah.
So there's 20 other bits of law that have gone through this exact same process where no one really paid that much attention to them, and they've just been rushed through. And I mean, what the hell were the government doing for the last however many years? They have to rush all these things through last second.
But there was 20,000 letters sent on this one topic.
Yeah. So this is,
and only 40 MPs turned up to debate.
Yeah, and so I'm sure there's plenty of bills and there's laws gone through that we don't know anything about. And okay, we're concentrating absolutely on this one, which, and as I heard someone put it quite well on the radio, which was the music industry is the body that keeps saying this is a good idea. The music and entertainment industry, let's put it a bit wider than that. And sure, it's very important that they do have their, grievances, which are some of them are legitimate, heard. But the fact is, the survival of the music industry is not more important than the survival of the internet.
No.
And this does impact heavily on what the internet is now and what it can be in the future.
And also for all the, yes, there is piracy and yes, there's money getting lost, but for saying that, look at their sales. If you look at their sales over the last 3-4 years, they're still increasing.
Yeah, they're not.
For all the talk of an industry in crisis,
they're not short of money, and it's not the artists. And they keep bleating on about the artists losing out on money, but it's not them that get the money.
The bit that annoys me the most about this, it's the bloody Labour government that brought this in.
Yeah,
and I really that's the bit that sickens me, absolutely sickens me. A couple other points, I need to point them out. So Stephen Timms was the guy that led this digital economy bill. And I'll put the link in the show notes. I must get that quote recorded because I'm fed up saying it. It was a letter he sent back to one of his constituents, just pointing out that because I've got an IP address, which actually means the intellectual property address, and you just read it and thought, oh, what a complete knob.
Yeah.
No, no, it's just, that's the guy who's allegedly got finger on the pulse of this country when it comes to the digital economy. Scary.
Scary, scary, scary.
Um, I'd put in some notes, big business owns the government. This proves it. Very little businesses actually upset about this. The ISPs were very, initially, a lot of them were very vocal. But the only one that's really kind of stepped back up again is TalkTalk. So they published a blog post the day after, and they've reiterated their commitment, which is that unless we're served with a court order, we'll never surrender our customers' details to rights holders. We're the only major ISP to have taken this stance, and we will maintain it. If we're instructed to disconnect an account due to illegal alleged copyright infringement, we will refuse to do so and tell the rights holders we'll see them in court.
And good for them. I mean, I heard at one point they were even going to flatly deny, you know, everything to do with the bill, but they can't really take that stance.
No. O2 also put out an open letter from O2's head of home and broadband. And I'm going to pronounce his name wrongly, which is a bit unfortunate. Felix Gear. I'm sure it's not pronounced like that.
Yeah.
And they prattled on about how, you know, the internet's brought some change and hey ho, we've had to go along with this. And end up with this. So our message to the music company and film industry lobbyists who have been campaigning so hard for this change in the law is simple. You've got what you wanted. Now wake up, smell the coffee and start really focusing on giving customers what they want.
Yep.
And you're like, well, great.
I guess they're all worried. The ISPs are worried that it's them that's going to get all this bad rap, and it's, you know, they're having to deal with things that they're never set up to do.
Yeah,
I feel sorry for them. But
So again, I'll add it to the show notes, but you can check to see what your MP did. I'll put up the link to the actual who voted for what, and that's on the Parliament website. And if you're really annoyed, you can visit the Open Rights Group, who are still campaigning for on many fronts around about digital rights. So definitely worthwhile visiting. I think that's all I want to say about that, because it annoyed me so much.
We've managed 16 minutes of it. I think that's probably enough for the
sorry, listeners. Right, happy, joy. iPhone OS 4.
Happy, joy. Really?
Yeah, fantastic. So,
okay.
Oh, I'm going to love this. Do you want to take us through it, or will I?
Well, no, right, okay. And here's the thing.
How many coffees have you had?
Yeah, I've had two in quick succession, which is not good. I didn't end up watching the actual live thing going on. And
yep.
Partly that was by accident. But also, there was a decision there not to make no effort to. I mean, I hate the way that they call these things like 2 or 3 days ahead of them and expect journalists to jump and go and, you know, to their whim to go and, you know, watch this event of these amazing things that they're going to talk about when they could just do a press release. I mean,
Microsoft are doing it right now with a new phone.
I know it's irrational, but it's how I feel. I mean, they keep doing this where, you know,
everybody does it. It's great press.
People jump to their will. You know, that people will travel across the whole country to go to this next amazing Apple thing where they announce a couple of poxy little things.
But it's not an Apple thing. This is the tech industry. Google have done it tonight.
And I can't yet.
Twitter are going to do it with their CHIRP conference. Facebook are doing it next week with their developer conference.
But you know the things ahead of time, though, don't you? As in they released their dates.
Well, not really.
Well, whatever.
You know, little tidbits, but you knew quite a lot of what was coming out.
They could have emailed me this. I don't need to have an event to talk about.
Anyway, have you finished, man?
I don't know. Carry on.
So have you seen any of this?
Yeah, so I have since heard about it. Nothing excites me. Does it excite you?
So multitasking, you don't think that's a good thing? You don't think the way that you can now have Spotify running in the background is a good thing?
I think it's a very good thing.
Fantastic.
It's been asked for a long time, but I can't do it on my phone.
Why not?
Because it's an older phone.
Oh, bless. Is that what's wrong?
No, but the thing is, I can't get out of my pissing contract. If I wanted it, can I?
I feel like Dr. Ruth. I feel that over a few chats, we eventually get to the root of the whole root of the problem here. You've got an old phone.
Yeah, but it's only old because they tie me into an 18-month contract.
That's O2.
But I haven't got any other choice.
So much hate.
I didn't at the time. I do now.
but surely you're going to buy a new phone in the middle of the year.
Yeah, but it's not going to be an iPhone. I've already made my mind up.
Fantastic.
I am moving away. I am getting out. I reject their reality.
Anyway, multitasking, I thought, looked pretty sweet.
So I haven't seen it in operation. So so you can.
I'll give you a brief description. Yeah, then instead of just letting apps run, they're saying they've enabled 7 services that they believe developers want to take advantage of, and that's to allow them to prolong battery life as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So the 7 services are background audio, voice over IP, background location, push notifications, local notifications, task completion, and fast app switching. And then they showed Pandora running in the background. When the screen's locked, the controls that normally control the iPod app are actually controlling Pandora, and seem to work very nicely.
That doesn't cover one of my pet peeves then, which is, say there's a link in... I'm going to have to say something other than Tweety, because I think Tweety's got its own browser installed.
Yeah.
But where you click a web link and it takes you to Safari.
Yeah.
But then, when you try and go back, you can't go back because there's nothing to go back to. I've noticed that in quite a few apps, actually, but this doesn't seem to solve that.
Well, I don't know if the fast app switching... something that Tweety 2 did... that he talked about was persistence.
Yeah.
So that when you moved away from the app, if I was browsing your tweets under your profile, if I close the app, go to Safari and launch the Tweety again,
so
it took me back to where it was.
So that's what they're covering in fast app switching,
yeah? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. It wasn't covered enough.
Yeah.
It wasn't covered enough. But I know the developer for Tweety 2 had called that kind of idea of persistence. Mm-hmm. So you know where you last were, and as you launched it again...
And
it
that's as
there.
Good as multitasking. I mean, that probably can't work for all different kinds of games and stuff. But
they showed you Pandora, which looked nice. And the other one, which I thought was good because it got it out in the open, was Skype. Running in the background, running all the time. If I've got it running, you can call me on Skype.
Fantastic.
And it'll show me online. And to me, that ended all the kind of speculation about, but they're going to allow voice over IP and how does that work and all that kind of stuff. So to have, I think, Skype and Pandora up there was a fairly good demo.
Did they cover whether you can have both of those happening?
Yeah. You double tap on the home button and it basically slides up. So they kind of changed the look of it slightly. So it's almost like a kind of 3D-ish dock, and it slides up and you can then switch between, and it was like... You could only see 4 icons of what was running, but you could then swipe to the left and you'd see another 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So they had like 7 different icons of apps running at once.
Okay. And I guess there can only ever be that many. Is that right? If they've got one service that you can use. Because you're never going to need to have more than one background audio, are you? I don't know.
I don't know, because you might be wanting to do some radio and some other bits and pieces. And I don't know.
Anyway.
I think, I mean certainly for things like, I'm looking at the things like push notifications, you're going to have maybe a few things open. I think there's a little bit of unrest. I mean, some people are saying, well, why not instant messaging? They don't seem to be really supporting instant messaging. You're focusing voice over IP. The background location things, I think you might want to have 2 or 3 of them open. So there's a few things I think you maybe want open at once. We'll only really know once it finally gets delivered.
And if it gets, and which phones it's going to get delivered to.
Yes. So, well, I think they've already said it's going to be, for multitasking, it's only going to be 3GS that gets that. The 3G won't get it.
Big fail for me then.
Yep.
Big fat fail.
You've got a 3G just now, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just saying it's just because of the performance.
And they know by the time it gets to June or whenever they're going to start releasing this that most people will be out of contract and looking for the next phone as well.
Sure.
And
it's a good
way of pushing you to get a new phone.
Definitely. Especially in America, because 2-year contracts compared to here.
Wow.
A lot of the contracts are 2 years. So we'll rattle through other things.
Yep.
Folders. You can, and I hate, actually, I've really starting to annoy me just how much, I basically don't care where my apps are anymore. I just have to search for them all the time because I've got so many.
That's just because you're ridiculous at buying too many of them.
Yeah. Well, I can now buy a lot more because with folders, yeah, basically you can, if you drag an icon over the top of another icon, it creates a folder. Names a folder based on the genre of the first one, but you can rename it. Each folder can have, I think it was 12 or 16 apps in it. And if you turned every app space into a folder, you can have 2,160 apps on your iPhone.
So you can have a folder in a folder?
You can have 12 apps in each folder.
And there's that many screens.
Each icon space on each page can be a folder.
Right.
And you can also have a folder in your the kind of dock icons.
Right.
Which makes quite a nice kind of launch concept. You know, you can keep your most used apps under probably one folder.
Yes.
So thought it was quite nice. Nothing particularly. I was a bit annoyed that they actually demoed putting wallpaper on the home screen and the lock screen as if it was a great feature.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, I had seen that, and to have that, as an announcement is...
That just made me chuckle.
Yeah, it made me laugh.
That made me chuckle.
Look how amazing this new technology is.
Exactly.
You can put a picture on your wallpaper.
You need to say it with a bit more a squeakier, kind of half-dying voice, because it did look frail as hell. The one that I was really chuffed about was the mail, unified inbox, woohoo!
Which, again, you talked about beforehand, so I guess it'd been a rumour.
I think it's been more than a rumour, people have been wanting it for so long. I've got 8 or 9 mail accounts there, and to have to jump out and into each one was just so annoying every time a mail pinged in.
Do they make it clear which mailbox it's from?
I didn't look at screenshots enough. I'm sure it will be. You can also organise mail by threads.
Okay.
And no great thing. And attachments are supported. So if you've got an app which will look at a Pages document, you can now open it up and it will ping open in the proper app.
Good.
And they did actually show it with Omnigraphle. They demoed that with. Next one was iBooks, which is coming to the iPhone.
Whoop-de-doo. I know this.
No mention about UK. So I'm very pessimistic about the whole thing. But it looks like very similar to Kindle. With iBooks, it's going to be buy it once and read it anywhere kind of thing.
Yeah, so again, if you've got something like an iPad and you are reading something on it, I guess you can take that from one to the other. But.
And you get a free Winnie the Pooh book.
Joys.
Which is great.
But sign Enterprise. Me up now.
Okay, I will. I'll log on right now. See, Chris is in there. Enterprise, multiple exchange accounts, mail encryption, a few other things. I guess the interesting one was with wireless app distribution. So previously you had to distribute via the iTunes store, which isn't ideal if you're an enterprise. So being able to do that now wirelessly within your own enterprise is quite smart.
So how are they going to do that and keep it all locked down then?
I don't know. But you're going to have wireless app.
You probably have to sign your soul away to actually get that option. But I think they had to do that, didn't they? Because that's one iPhone's big weaknesses is that it's not strong enough or encrypted enough or anything to satisfy larger organizations.
Yes. Something that was I actually thought was quite good was Game Center. So this was basically Xbox Live or Apple's own Xbox Live.
This is a reaction to the WinMofo.
I think so. And especially as the fact that it seems to be, it's basically a preview that's available when OS 4 comes out. But there's a couple other open faints kicking off, and there's a couple other kind of springing up, trying to bring in other developers in the iPhone market already. And I think Apple have just crushed it already by saying, we've got Game Center, you have friends, matchmaking, leaderboards, achievements.
In a gaming device, it's definitely... Microsoft hit the nail on the head because I don't like having to sign up for every single different...
No.
You know, every time I download a new app game...
No. I hate
passing my email address on just...
See that first year of PS3 before they really got themselves sorted out and having to register each different game and get it...
How painful. And also just doesn't make me feel comfortable. I mean, that's passing a lot of details onto a lot of different people.
I think that's what annoys me. That's what annoyed me when they kind of gave in to EA... with Xbox Live.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That was a real sucker. So this will make a lot more sense. I mean, just having everything just pouring through the Game Center, if it works, should work really well. And probably the bit that they spent longest time on and the bit that I just fell asleep was iAds.
Because they were trying to tell you how amazing ads are going to be.
Yeah.
You're going to want ads, Ian.
You're going to love it.
You're going to want our ads. I can't say these words. We're trying to keep this clean.
Basically they started, and everybody knew this was coming up because they'd already bought an ad company. So they're not going to buy an ad company and do nothing with it. So they bought an ad company. You've got iAds now. It's a 60-40 split. Developer gets 60%, Apple gets 40%. Apple will sell and host the ads. But they're, and to be fair, they actually are very interactive. But I don't want them.
They're adverts.
Yeah, exactly.
We get hit by millions of adverts every freaking day.
Yep. And the bit that would annoy me the most is, and it annoys me now, if I've paid for an app and then I get an advert,
yeah,
I just feel like it's,
exactly
like, it's like and, double dunting.
And as a developer, why wouldn't you put ads in there? But you're going to get more money.
See if there's a free choice. And I mean, we Twitterific do this. We're free and you get some adverts, or you pay some money and there's no adverts. Flickr's the same. Flickr, I get adverts. If I pay my yearly pay price, I don't get adverts.
But as we've seen along in the TV industry, you know, you get pay-per-view boxing matches, which they still have millions and millions of adverts in it. You think,
pay
what
£15
the hell have I just paid £15 for?
Yeah.
You know.
So I was so switched off. And then he said, well, we've not got anybody else bought into this, but we've made up our own to show you the potential.
Yeah.
And the first one was Toy Story 3, which... Right. And the only thing that was quite funny about that was, obviously, he's on the Disney board and he was talking all the way about Toy Story 3 and he went, and by the way, it is really good because I've watched it.
Right.
And you were like, very good. And then the next one was it was Nike. So it was some stuff around that they'd done with Nike because they really like the brand.
Can I just say, for one, iAds is, first of all, it's just rubbish name. And can they just get off of this I crap? I'm just bored of it. Are you not bored of it?
I don't care. I've got to be honest. I don't sit there and go...
It really bugged me. Again, that probably says something about my state of mind, but...
No, well, and seeing the grand scheme of things. Bigger things to worry about.
Yeah, I know.
Honestly. I just think, you know, who cares about that? I mean, whatever I thought I would put in a thing called Xbox 360? What does that mean?
Well, I everything, say. I shut the hell up.
And it was all HTML5.
Yes. Well, we all know why that is, don't we?
Yeah, because it's the future.
future according to Apple, yeah.
Well, and probably everybody else.
No, not everyone.
We'll come on
yet.
To that.
Very rarely.
So, no multitasking for iPhone 3G. We slipped in right at the end. Which I thought was a bit nasty.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, you know, everything we've been talking about, you get the adverts, 3G owners. Nothing else.
Probably you get the adverts and you'll probably get
adverts. Oh, but you're going to love the adverts. You're really going to love these adverts. Yeah.
Love the adverts. Believe in the adverts. And a couple other things that came out from some screenshots that I may or may not have seen. The faces and places are going to be inside the iPhoto app, which was quite nice. What else came out? The actual dev beta was launched in the same day. So developer could download the Xcode and they also could download an image that they could put on their phone.
Okay.
And good luck to you if you wanted to do that. Mm. Because it's a beta. And it'll be launched in the summer, fall for iPad.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, that the iPad hasn't got it soon, you know, as soon as it's available. So
yeah, well,
it means the iPad isn't quite the same copy that we thought it was.
Yeah, but I think also it's just Apple's not as big a company as everybody makes out. You know, resource-wise, they aren't a Google, they aren't a Microsoft. You know, so engineering-wise, I think they do stretch themselves.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's showing more and more as they try and target more markets. It is becoming a bit of a stretch. So what wasn't mentioned, which wasn't a surprise for me, I know it sounds maybe a bit big-headed, it wasn't a surprise, was no hardware and forward-facing cameras and all that kind of stuff, because that's usually much later on, that's usually end of May, June time.
Well, they'll tell us probably at the end of May, June, that there's going to be an event in 2 days' time, and that everyone needs to jump to their headquarters to go and listen.
And I don't see what's wrong with that at all.
Okay.
Anything else to add on?
Snap my fingers and you will come running.
Just like everybody's done with Microsoft tonight to go and see their new pink phone.
Yes.
Except it's not pink.
Do we know what it's going to be called? Because Microsoft.
Yeah, well, I'm going to fire up Tweety, which is probably the wrong thing, but somebody posted up the name and I linked it when it just took me to a really horrible flash site, but there was a name.
Anyway, we're over half an hour now. I think I'm only on our third story. So I think.
Well, you've asked now. Kin.
What's that?
Kin.
Kin?
Kin.com. K-I-N.
Okay.
Next Everybody's off. Running to Microsoft tonight to go and see about that. So that was the event. there was one little change afterwards, which seems to have snowballed into the biggest flame war
over the weekend. Absolutely.
Apple Adobe have kind of fell out proper now. So there was a developer, there was a rule change basically, in that cross compilers are no longer allowed when you're developing on the iPhone.
A very small statement change, isn't it? But it actually does have wide implications.
Do you want me to read it out? Is it worthwhile reading out? Applications may only use documented APIs in the manner prescribed by Apple and must not use or call any private APIs. Applications must be originally written in Objective-C, C, C++, or JavaScript as executed by the iPhone OS WebKit engine, and only code written in C, C++, and Objective-C may compile and directly link against the documented APIs.
You can only build applications for the iPhone and iPad if you use our tools to do it. You may not use third-party intermediary applications.
Correct.
And basically, so Adobe tonight have launched their CS5. And one of the big touted features of CS5, and in fact of previous sort of air building applications, has been you can compile these and they will run on iPhone and iPad. We offer you a way to develop that means that you can spread your applications across five different platforms rather than just one.
Yep.
And in one very small change, and which is, a lot of people have said, is directed directly at this Flash development and Adobe. You can't do it. So one of their big touted features of their new CS5 product and all the hard work and effort that goes into it has been wiped out in one minuscule bit of text. And you don't think that it's going to annoy people?
Well, in the grand scheme of things, is it a big deal?
I think it's a huge deal. I mean, there's
for who?
It's the concept.
The concept is if you want to develop for an iPhone, you buy a Mac and you download Xcode and you develop for it.
I understand Apple's desire to control every single aspect of their product. They're going to create a whole world unto themselves. You know, eventually you're going to have the Apple Internet. Which is the version that you can access through your browsers that sit on an Apple computer, because they control everything from start to finish, and now they're even prescribing not that your application, you know, your app, you can build the perfect application that works very well, is great, adds functionality, but you can't use it because you didn't write it in the way that Apple prescribes that you have to write it, and it really really bugs me that they've gone down this route. And how annoyed must you be if you're Adobe? Now, we're going to come on to Adobe in a minute, and I'm annoyed with them as well. So this isn't just the company specific, but it's really, you know, I really dislike the sentiment behind it.
I don't see it as a direct attack on Adobe. I think it's Apple protecting their business, and that they want people, if they're developing for their platforms, to work on these platforms and in full control of that environment and full control of the experience.
But there's no need for them to have that control. If an application works and it works well, there's no need for them to have that control. And
define working well.
And it's working as it should do.
Yeah,
if an application works without crashing and does what it's supposed to do, does it in a nice slick way, what the hell does it matter? And it's also the fact that this hurts development across platforms, because developers have to make a decision now, and there's not a decision they can make where they can say, right, I'm going to build for the iPhone and, you know, in an easy way transport that across all platforms. And that's deliberate that they want to make it hard for a developer. They have to make a decision to make for the iPhone because the iPhone's dominant at the moment. So if you want to earn some money, you have to build for the iPhone. But they've taken away that opportunity for that developer to also spread and help other platforms. And again, it's another decision that hurts the consumer.
It does. How does it hurt the consumer?
Because platforms will fall behind. The development for other platforms won't be
so as strong. That argument that you've been propagating there, that is what's kind of propelled through the blogs over the weekend. And so you've got the platform evangelist for the Flash blog posted up about how a large number of Apple employees will disagree with this and blah, 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 and screw you, Apple, and all that kind of good stuff. Roll back 15 years, OS X is coming out. What do Adobe do? We're not going to support it. We're going to go to Windows. So who's hurting who? So if I roll back all that time, was that an all right decision?
But you know, so Adobe was one of the big reasons why anyone ever used a Mac in the first place.
Yep, and when Apple moved to Mac OS X, and when Apple in the doldrums, Adobe turned around and went, sod it. We'll focus on Windows. Even, I think it was only 5-6 years ago that Photoshop eventually came out for Mac OS X. It's only today with CS5 that there's 64-bit, there have been 64-bit in Windows. There's been many releases that Adobe do, and the first platform they focus on is Windows, and they'll either come to Apple eventually or not at all.
But yeah.
So at the same time, should Apple turn around and say, yay, well done, Adobe, you just do what you like with our tools?
I still think that if Adobe came, this guy's already said they won't, if Adobe said, right, we're not developing any more creative applications for Apple, I still think that would hurt Apple more than this is going to hurt Adobe. Personal feeling on that? Because most people on... Okay, this is so sweeping and wide. A core of Mac hardware users are developers or creatives using Adobe software.
Yep. But how big? I just think it's a tiny, tiny amount.
What, of people using Adobe software? Or?
Yeah, that core amount you've talked about. In the grand scheme of things, I think this is Apple making sure that the products that are released on their platform are decent.
Okay.
There's a big debate over the weekend. If you go and compare, if you look at a lot of the apps that have been released on the iPhone and how it's people using the right tools to develop for the right platform, gives you a nice strong set of applications. And people have been comparing it to what they've seen elsewhere, using the third-party compilers, trying to shortcut things in, not taking full advantage of some of the APIs and some of the power that's there. And ultimately, the customer gets shortchanged by that, by developers being quite lazy.
But developers are not always quite lazy. There will always be lazy developers. And just because you use the right tools doesn't mean that it's going to make any difference. You can still get shoddy stuff.
Oh, no, absolutely. But there's more of a guarantee if you use the right tools.
Nah, I don't agree with that.
I do.
Okay, and say, I've written after this in big red letters that this is more example of my regime. But it is Apple wanting to have something from start to finish,
no, but you're,
which is
to me, you're
completely
missing
isolated.
To me, and this is the thing that I never get about people that turn into a hate against one company. This is just business. It's not an Apple thing. This is just business. It's Apple protecting their business the same way Adobe wants to support everything because they're seeing people disappearing from their Flash platform. HTML5 is going to nibble away at the market they've got right now, and they're doing everything they can to try and protect it. They are under threat. And if you don't think they're under threat, why when they went to, I'm trying to remember where it was they went to last week. I'm sure I put it in the show notes and I can't see it for reading it.
They've already said that this is going to cause them harm, because one of the big things about Flash platform is the fact that it is omnipresent and spreads across everything. And as soon as one person makes that decision to stop doing that, it hurts them. And so, sure, they're in the game for saying that. But there's going to come a time when Apple are going to develop their, you know, there's going to be websites that only work on Apple products, because they'll think, right, well, HTML isn't doing what we want it to do, so we'll do Apple. Well, in fact, iHTML, no doubt. And they'll have iJavaScript and iEverything, and suddenly it will only work on Apple products, and then everyone's just like it was when there were websites that would only work with Internet Explorer and all the decisions that they made. And we've been working really hard to get away from that insular, isolated environment
I don't think it will go to that. I think that's extremists wanting to propagate this kind of view that this is what's going to happen. And if you look at what Apple doing...
Every single app has to go through a moral...
Yeah, but so what about other work with WebKit?
It's not just, does this app work? Does it not work?
Is this app Apple? Talking specifically about this stuff about there's going to be an iHTML. What about all the work they've done with WebKit? It's all about propagating standards. It's all about getting people to adopt standards.
You know, everyone keeps going on about, we talk about trying to remove all this bad stuff from the App Store, but there's the Safari app, which, you know, you can get all the bad stuff through. I think there'll come a day when they'll block things, deciding, you know, they'll make a decision on some things that they don't, you know, want to put pass through their Safari.
But people are using Opera right now, which goes through a proxy. And why does nobody complain about that?
It goes through a proxy, but it doesn't get censored. Anyway, this is all...
No, but how do you know?
My, my extreme.
No, hold on. How do you know? And this is what I don't understand. You see, that people have this view about, oh, Apple's bad or Microsoft's bad, or there's a whole load of stuff happening right now that you just don't, you know, start to question other things. Opera's going through a proxy and you don't think it's happened because it's not.
No, I don't know that it's happened, but I don't use Opera. No, yeah, it's the extremes of everything. So, yeah, okay, I'm taking it too far, but it's the direction it's not good for anyone.
This is just big business. So if
you
make
a
statement...
That's not an excuse, and I don't like that being used as an excuse.
I'm not using an excuse. I just see this as big business. Business are always going to protect themselves because at the end of the day, they've got shareholders.
Yeah, but that shouldn't be an excuse
turn around
for letting someone get away with things that we don't agree with. And I don't agree with the direction this is going.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. I don't really see the big impact at the moment.
No, it's more a direction and a philosophy.
Yeah, but I don't see where the big danger is, you know. And I'm looking at it and I'm trying to think from a developer, and you know, what do I lose here? You know, I need to sharpen up my C++ skills and go and write some stuff for Apple. Boo-hoo.
I've said my piece.
Well, we'd mentioned CS5 launch.
Yes,
and it has launched.
Yes,
and interestingly, they still kept their flash to iPhone development stuff in it as well.
I don't think they had any time to remove it, even if they wanted to. I mean, it was...
No, screw you, Apple.
Screw you, guys. So, yeah, I sat through the... They effectively had a live stream launch. Not, well, in fact, it wasn't live stream. It was we will play a video at a particular point.
I wasn't sure because I signed up over the weekend. And they said you had to sign up and you need to register and you need to commit to being here and all this kind of stuff.
And all it was they turned on a video that they'd pre-recorded.
Yeah, because I turned up at 4:15 and I'm there's a video playing.
And that was it. And a little bit of a Twitter stream from if you hashtagged something or other.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ultimate disappointment, has to be said.
But I was on a different computer not signed in. And I thought, where do I sign in? Where's this stuff about being signed in? I'm confused.
That was disappointing. Not only that, it was they put like 5 minutes to each, or a particular tranches of their product. So there was no detail in there really. So there was last time round they did do a kind of live stream where there was even question and answer sessions, and I think it did go on a bit too long for most people. But for this one, they sort of just really did a quick roundup with some really dorky people. I don't know if you got the impression, but each of them was a dork. And the star was Wolverine. He was amazing.
To be fair, I thought the guy that was doing the actual linking bits, it was almost like they'd found some engineer somewhere.
He looked
particularly dull.
If he'd had, he could have done the village people, the biker, quite happily. He definitely looked like that.
Well, I came in when it was the end of the guy doing the Dreamweaver stuff.
Yeah, so you'd miss some of the sort of... Yeah, I'm not even going to go through. Myself and Paul were watching it. We were on Skype at the same time. We had nicknames for all of them, but most of them I cannot describe right now.
You should have recorded that conversation. You just played it back right now.
I mean, suffice to say that at one point someone even put in the Twitter stream that Wolverine's telling us how to use Photoshop.
But I thought it was a woman that was telling you how to use Photoshop.
Hang on, I've got to get the door. Sorry.
Okay, so what were the main features that were on demo then, or on this film?
Well, again, it was pretty hard to... let me start with what is probably the biggest and most anticipated feature. And that is something called Content Aware Fill.
Oh.
And they've been throwing this out there in all their previews and their like little snippets and things. Effectively, you can ask the software to make a best guess or at filling an area of blankness on your page with similar content to what's around it. And as far as I can tell from the videos, this is voodoo.
You know, you just copied that word from everybody else using it.
it's basically they showed an example in the show of they wanted to move a horse. So that involved cutting out the horse from the background, and obviously where you'd cut it out you had to fill the background with more grass and a fence and some trees and a bit of sky. and it just does it. And it does a very good job. It's not what you'd, you know, an artist would ever consider a finished job, but it's pretty incredible what it can do.
All I was going to say is I saw the labs video that they did about 3 weeks ago when they first started to talk about this, and they took the tree out from the left-hand side.
And it can actually fills and grades the sky and adds clouds in. It's
and there was a little bit where it hadn't really worked, but all I did was just circle around that and say, well, you know, content aware on this little anomaly.
Yeah.
And it looks around and goes, well, everything else is this, and it fixed it. And I was like, wow.
They showed the removal of a road from a desert, and it's not an insignificant part of the picture that they're removing, but it does a good job of, you know, placing it with scrub and bushland and rocks even.
Yeah,
it's very, very clever. Will be very, very useful, especially when you're not talking about, you know, huge projects, you know, massive billboards.
Even just for home pictures. I'm taking a picture and I've not aligned it properly and I want to remove this bit because it's in the way.
I want to see it in the real world rather than there, obviously, you know, they've checked that these things work.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking is, like, you know how you're taking a picture and you can never... I don't know. You're out somewhere and you want a picture of just one person and somebody's in the background.
Yep.
I don't care anymore. I'll just take a picture and I'll go
chop
home
them
and
out.
Just yeah. But I won't take an hour to chop them out and be really use my really crappy skills. I'll use voodoo.
It might turn into the new phrase. Oh my goodness! I've been content aware. I was in there.
Well, somebody else pointed out on another podcast, is this the end for watermarks? You know, all these sites that have got images with watermarks on it, do you just circle a watermark and say goodbye?
Or does it assess all the other watermarks around the page? And anyway, yes, yeah, good point. I mean, you can do that anyway. If you're clever enough, you can do it anyway.
But I ain't clever. You know my skills are limited, whereas I know your skills are not limited.
Another feature which looked... pretty incredible was the puppet warp.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Now that looked really. I mean, that was. They took a picture of a person that they'd put on a page. They added some skeleton marks effectively, and they were able to move those points to make that person move on the page in a very clever, warpy and again voodoo way. Very clever.
It was an elephant trunk as well. And they did the same thing, put the points on it, and then they moved the trunk around.
And it seems to be able to understand what's going on. See, I mean, I don't understand the algorithms that go on in the background. It's very clever. And for everyone who says, well, computers, you know, what's the point of them getting any faster and, you know, more powerful?
That's the point.
That's exactly why.
Definitely. Totally agree.
I mean, it's a great example of why we need to keep computers advancing. Because things just become available that we're just not even heard of or thought about before.
But I think what I took out of it, a lot of the tools they were showing you were, and I guess you've said it already, you could, like the content aware fill, you could have done it previously. You could have taken things out and cut and pasted things in and matched it up.
Well, Photoshoppers have been doing that for years, but yeah.
Yep, but they're taking it away, and instead of taking maybe like an hour to do it, or a half hour for some really skilled, or even 10 minutes, it's now a 30-second job.
It's a 30-second job with about a 5-second touch-up, yeah. It's,
yeah,
you know, potentially
which is amazing.
Very, very useful. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have to say, the rest of it, I wasn't particularly enthralled by. There was nothing really in Dreamweaver that... I mean, a 5-minute episode is never going to be enough to highlight what interesting things they've got in a coding application, which is why we don't really see that much from Flash. And we haven't really seen that much from the Dreamweaver end of things. So I will have to look into that more, but they certainly didn't highlight anything that I thought, oh, that's good.
No, and as I said, I thought I'd missed quite a bit of it, because when they went on to Flash, it was more really we're everywhere and didn't really focus too much on what was new.
No, they didn't. And
which I was a bit disappointed with.
You know, their strongest thing in Flash was, you know, this iPad and iPhone support, which now doesn't work.
Yeah, which is...
They concentrate on that.
Bless.
I mean, I've heard from Paul, our action script guru. He says there's some pretty snazzy features in the latest Flash player. Again, things enough for him to be interested in, including some peer-to-peer type stuff. There's actually going to have some pretty good implications for game developing and things like that.
Oh, very good.
So there's clearly bits in here that, in fact, you know, most of it, I would say, I wish I hadn't watched it, really. I don't think I've gained anything from it.
There's a couple of bits I saw, and I just don't know if it's my lack of Photoshop knowledge. But they were talking about the HDR Pro and features.
Yeah. So they've got HDR in it already, but they've enhanced it.
Yeah, and it looked like there was an awful lot of control in there that you don't currently get.
There's a great bit of software, and I don't know what it's... I can't remember what it's called.
Photomatix Pro?
I'm not sure. That's because I don't...
I'll mention Photomatix Pro, which I've kind of maybe looked at.
But it's a great bit of software. It does all the work for you in an HDR way. So there's some interesting effects you can get from HDR, which, say, Photoshop did have features in it that enabled you to go some of the way, but in a realistic way, whereas these other applications have gone in a much more artistic way. So it looks like they've added those artistic elements to their HDRs.
And I also thought the noise tools that they were demoing looked good in the demo. And an automatic lens correction, connecting online to get your profile for your lens and then applying automatic fixes. Again, sounded very, very smart.
I'll be honest and say I don't know whether that's been in Photoshop before or whether it's maybe a carryover from something like Lightroom.
As I said, that was my quick 10-minute watch the video and take some thoughts away, and I thought, yeah, that
looks
really smart.
But you are a bit photo-obsessed at the moment.
Slightly.
You got it on the brain.
Well, I'm a newbie.
Yeah, there's so much to consume, isn't there? But anything like this is interesting. I mean, but everything we've said is, for me, by the by, because they've gone and done it again.
This sounds bad.
Well, I have Adobe CS3.
Many people didn't upgrade, didn't they?
Design Premium. And the reason that I didn't upgrade last time was because the UK pricing is so unbelievably offset to the UK US price.
Okay. I'm restricting the show notes.
They also had they basically said anyone with any sort of version of Creative Suite can upgrade to CS4 for the same price as someone who's just upgraded to the latest version of CS3. So, you know, they screwed over a whole ton of people by not offering a good upgrade path. Not recognizing the fact that someone's just paid a lot of money for their, you know, one iteration back, and someone who hasn't bought anything since, you know, the early 2000s can get the same price. So there's two levels, and they've done it again, really. So at the moment, the full price in the US is the equivalent, we'll ignore that here, is the equivalent of just over £1,000, so £1,235. UK, so ex VAT, it's £1,509. So, you know, there's near enough 300 quid there.
Extra. It's hard to justify.
And then the upgrade costs, America £519, in the UK £714.
Ouch.
And it hurts.
Ouch.
It hurts. What?
And this is the I used to read PC Pro quite a bit. John Honeywell always used to argue with Adobe about why their price is different for a digital upgrade.
Yeah.
Where are the extra costs coming from?
Especially as, you know, we get lumped in with Europe. and their argument is always, well, we've got all the costs of translation and stuff like that. Well, as far as I'm concerned, okay, I can speak English. Give me the American version then. I'll take it. I'll take your Zeds. but they won't do that either.
What, of interest, what stops you buying an American one? Do you need an American credit card?
If you go down the American route, they've put in an American upgrade path and a UK upgrade path. You cannot switch between the two. They've put the blocks in place to stop you from doing that. You know, that's another reason that people got annoyed is that, you know, they said, okay, well, I'll just buy the American version. They said, oh, sorry, you can't do that.
Almost sounds like profiteering.
It bugs me, and
so if you move from if you move from the UK to America, you'd have to buy
it properly.
You'd
have to buy a new full version. Yeah.
Oh, ouch. Mm.
So it bugs me enough that I'm just not upgrading again. So this is now the second iteration, because I'm thinking to myself, why, if someone on CS2 can upgrade to CS5 for the same price that I can, well, I'll just wait a couple more iterations and
make it a worthwhile.
Make it the step worthwhile, and maybe even make the difference in price worthwhile.
Yep.
So
no, I always knew that, and you know my background. I'm not into Photoshop and not into the kind of Adobe suite at all. But I always knew from the, as I said, the John Hannibal articles that he did, there was always an issue with pricing. But it's just when you hear like yourself going through the prices, that's just sore.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are reasons they could give as to, you know, it costs that much money to operate in Europe, and that's all the bits and bobs. But tough, I ain't buying your product. And they struggled last time, and I think they'll struggle again because people aren't willing to be ripped off.
One thing I thought was worth pointing out, and that's one of the podcasts I really like listening to, is Mac Bites. This Thursday, and I'm just checking my calendar, this Thursday at 8 o'clock, they're doing a Mac Bites Live, where one of the presenters will be doing a kind of first look webcast on Creative Suite 5. And is also quite happy to take questions, and if you submit photos beforehand, I think she's quite happy to try and show some of the tools available in CS5 to make those photos and images better. So if you go to macbites.co.uk/live-online, and hopefully I'll do the podcast in plenty of time, that will be up tomorrow night, and you'll actually get this before Thursday.
But I actually
joined them last week. They did a live event for the iPhone launch. And it was quite a good laugh getting the reaction from the folk in the chat room, which was almost the same as we were tonight. It was some positives round about some of the new stuff that I did in, and iAds was just, oh, shut up. So yeah, it's actually, if you're interested in the Creative Suite, it might be worthwhile attending just to get a good view on it and actually ask some questions, get a bit more detail behind it.
Indeed.
Advert over. I should have been paid for that. Sponsored by Mac Bites.
Maybe we should be paying them for making our podcast sound more respectable.
Thanks for that. Right, we've probably talked for ages now, haven't we?
We are over an hour. Maybe we should break this into two parts, or maybe we should just let people suffer.
No, I'm just going to crack on. I can't be arsed.
I agree.
I'm even going to keep that bit in. Sorry, listeners.
We love you, really.
I guess more developer upset then. We've done quite a lot of developer upset tonight. Twitter has bought Tweety.
Which seems good.
And Twitter had a blog post at the weekend announcing that they'd been in touch with 8Bits, who was a guy behind the development for Tweety 2 and for Tweety. And one of the issues they had was that if you went onto the App Store and searched for Twitter, you didn't get a Twitter app. You got a number of different applications. They wanted a specific Twitter presence, so they've bought Tweety. It'll be renamed Twitter for iPhone, and it'll be made free instead of the $159 it now costs. And 8Bits, or Lauren Britcher is the guy's name, is becoming a key member of Twitter's mobile team. And I guess this is where people started to get a bit uncomfortable from a development point of view. Right now, if you were an app developer and your only app was a Twitter app, I'd be kind of worried.
Yes, I guess.
and just because I've now taken probably one of the most successful paid for applications, made it free, and that is now the official app from a Twitter perspective.
Yeah, and again, welcome to the modern marketplace, isn't it?
Pretty much.
There was always going to be someone who's going to make a free Twitter app, and you know, with Tweety. Twitterific had its free version, didn't it?
Yeah.
And it's the same with most apps. Eventually someone will come along and make a free version of a paid one. And okay, so, this is the official one now.
Yeah, it's the official one. And I guess in the developer, if you look inside some of the developer forums tonight, they've actually had to go in and try and go on the record and say this isn't a threat to other developers, and you know, you can still, you know, take advantage of, you know, try to do things differently or try to offer something uniquely that they might not offer. And I guess the concern is, does that now mean that this app will get preferential treatment? You know, will it get access to things that other people won't get? Will it get, you know, almost like private API access to certain features on Twitter?
They've been pretty open with their API platform, so I doubt it.
Their
API platform's been more advanced than its website.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that people have had is that the kind of firehose access, so access to the full you know, volume of tweets has been limited and only to certain people. So I think there's a concern that there's maybe something that's going to do. And other flip of the coin, we've seen other apps bought and turned into official apps and they've got worse. You know, so who's to say that actually the official one won't be worse than some of the other developer ones that are maybe more aggressively developed?
On the grand scheme of things, Tweety was probably the one of the biggest bought ones anyway. So if it goes to free, it's not going to make a massive amount of difference to people.
And people are complaining as well, saying, well, do I get a refund? And it's like, get a grip.
No,
honestly,
you bought it because you wanted it. If you bought it yesterday and they've announced it's free today, then maybe.
There are loads of people complaining about how many times, because you bought the original Tweety and then you bought Tweety 2 and people are complaining. It's like, you made your choice and you're talking about pennies in the grand scheme of things. Absolute pennies.
If you paid five for it.
It's not like you've just spent, you know, £1,000 on CS5 and it's now free.
Yeah, exactly.
Then I would be annoyed. Rumours, Palm's up for sale.
Yeah, we thought they would struggle because they haven't really sold anything and they've obviously put a lot of money into it. But we're hearing that they are actually up for sale. Yes. And they've got interest.
Similarly, HTC, Lenovo and Dell are rumoured, with HTC being the favourite.
Yeah, I heard HTC as well. I don't know where I heard it. Random people saying, oh, I hear HTC.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's still a good brand in America.
Palm still has a great lot of love for it. And in fact, their small Palm offering, they're selling now in America or going to sell in America with free tethering and also has hotspots included in it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's almost like they're going quite hot for these MiFis, which are sort of little boxes that you whack a 3G SIM card in.
Yeah, well, I've been thinking about one.
Making their Palm product into one of these and offering free tethering and things like that is great, great incentive.
Yeah. I've been thinking about a MiFi just in case I buy an iPad.
Just in case.
Speaking of iPads, so just a quick update on last Thursday's Apple event. Sorry, it was 450,000 sold.
Because they have to start the event by telling you how
3.5 million apps. This is the only reason you kept this in. It's just so you could have another pop.
Yeah.
600,000 books.
We're great. Let's look at these figures.
But I guess more interesting was that if you go to the Daily Costs, so dailycosts.com, I'll put a link in the show notes, and it was the guy's done an article on how he uses it, how he believes he can use it as a tool, how he's replacing his laptop and how he's found it in actual practical use. And it's actually a pretty good read.
Just searching for anything that says,
no. iPad. He had some negatives in there
like
as well.
It will be good.
Well, there is that bit of me. I wish I could say there was like a little angel devil on each shoulder, but it's really just lots of little angels holding iPads in their hand going, bye! I will edit out me putting that girly voice on as well. The power of the edit. Right, hot breaking news time. Google Docs. I've just announced some new features.
Yeah, I felt well behind the time when I saw there'd been new features I hadn't heard about until you told me there's only been 10 minutes since they announced it. Well, yeah, an hour absolutely. And 10 minutes now.
Well, 2 hours and 10 minutes. It has been that long. First up, they've basically rewritten it from the ground up. So we use Google Docs when we're doing our show notes. And one of the things we've always noticed that if I make an edit, it's always maybe, 10, 15 seconds behind you getting the update.
It depends. Sometimes
if I hit the save button or the save auto saves every 15, 20 seconds or whatever.
It seems irrational. Inconsistent. Sometimes it does it straight away, other times it doesn't.
Well, it's been rewritten, so now it's instantaneous.
And I've noticed that tonight because I was trying to type something and all the text moved and I ended up typing it in the middle of something else.
Yeah, and that was me moving stuff around. Well, soon Google Docs will be instantaneous.
Yeah.
You'll see edits. I'll see you typing it. I'm thinking wave. Google Wave.
Wave functionality,
Yeah. So that sounds like a nice update, and that's going to apply to Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets as well. So instantaneous updates. And also you'll get something I thought they should have had in a long time ago was actual commenting. If I've got a doc, you can just put a comment in as an actual comment as you'd see it in Word, which would make a lot more sense than it is just now, which is all about kind of change the colour and add the comment in and put brackets. By the way, it was Chris that did this. You know, it just felt all a bit clunky.
Chris wrote regime.
Well, we all know that you're always going to write regime. It is your word. Regime. It never seems to be anything different.
Someone might listen.
Regime. And they're doing things like rulers and tab stops and better image handling. And they're also bringing in Google Drawings. So almost like an online whiteboard. Flowcharts, diagrams, stencils, chat windows so you can chat about different bits and pieces.
They have pretty much done, which I thought was, you know, was not ever going to get to. They have now got to a pretty sophisticated word processor in a browser. It's amazing.
Definitely. Definitely. And I've got to be honest, it's been using Google Docs for the podcast over the last year has been excellent.
Yeah.
You know, it's the a tools free tool
you get now, it's just, you know, there's going to be an alternative. And it makes me think, yes, cloud computing and things like Google's operating system have a chance because it shows what is possible.
Amazing. Definitely. And it's all very fast. Yeah, and it's all free.
It doesn't feel like a browser window at all.
No. It's definitely gone from that. Definitely going to that. So good changes ahead.
Yep.
Another Google story. They are slightly tweaking their search ranking algorithms, and speed is now going to be used as a ranking factor.
I'm not sure about this one. To be honest, I thought performance and availability were in there anyway, but it seems that it wasn't done on speed.
And it is now. So, but we need to kind of, I guess we need to just factor it in. There are two other ranking features or other ranking factors. Relevance is still by far carries the most weight. And site speed, it's a new one, doesn't carry as much weight as the actual relevance of the page. And currently, fewer than 1% of search queries are affected by the site speed signal in our implementation.
So it's a small minority, but it's... It's worrying if they index you at a bad time for your site.
Well, exactly.
I find a bit uncomfortable about it, is it doesn't necessarily give a good reflection of it unless they're doing a constant monitoring.
No, I mean, I can do, and fair enough, I've not done it for our website and I always need to find the time. But we could fully optimize it and do the best we can. But somebody else could fully optimize it and also spend £200 a week and get a better Google ranking just because it's faster.
Because it's sat on a bigger server somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to know, but say if they reckon it's only 1% affected and, you know, it's just another tool in their algorithm, then, well, fair enough. And I guess, you know, it is horrible going to a site that is slow. But then there's not that many sites out there that are constantly slow all the time.
No, apart from ours last year for a portion of the time.
No, fair enough. Fair dues, yeah.
But I think that's the thing, the site the host we were using were under a lot of pressure at the time. There was a lot of denial of services, there was some databases going down, we were doing a network move at the same time. I host a lot of clients'
websites myself. Well, I mean, I use a managed service, but, you know, same thing. I feel the pressure of, you get some little, again, insert expletive here, who constantly wants to hack the server that you're on wants to do denial of service. There's nothing you can do about it other than try and ride out the
storm. You know,
the bad stuff that comes out of it. It's really painful. And it completely stressed me out earlier this year because there was lots going on.
I remember.
But then that, you know, that would affect also, it has a lasting effect on the ranking now. So, you know,
I wonder how long lasting, because I do know an old friend's blog got hacked. His website or his web space got hacked and hidden in amongst a very deep layer, folder layer, was some...
There's an obscure... How do you say it?
Obscure? No.
It's when it's JavaScript that you... It's half JavaScript, half written, and it's obfuscated,
yeah.
Something like that. Anyway.
We can't pronounce it.
That was a very, very common thing. So your site looked perfectly normal.
Yeah, but hidden away in here was I'm going to capture your credit card detail nonsense.
Yeah.
And it was getting referenced from other sites into this one, and it was actually getting used.
I had a number of sites that had that. There was a whole spate of them went around.
Yeah, he only found out because he was getting some bizarre emails like, I know who you are. You've hacked my. You've got my details. I'll make sure the police get you. All this kind of nonsense. And then he found. I think it was one of his pals pointed out that, by the way, your Google's saying that your website hosts malware.
Yeah, that and yeah, very common. It was a very clever virus.
Yep. And at the time, I remember he was very annoyed because he actually got it all removed. But it took about 5 days for Google to update and say it's now clean.
And if you do rely on Google search results to drive people to your site,
those five days are very painful.
That's effectively 5 days where you're not on the high street.
Yep. Now, fair enough. I pointed out it's a blog. Cam, keep your pants on.
Yeah. You're not selling it. You're not. You know. You've got income.
And fair enough. I know what you're saying. It's like my family are looking at it. It's like, yeah, but email them. Tell them it's a blog. Two people visit every day.
Yeah, but there's nothing you can do to control them, and there's some clever people out there, and that was a clever virus. It was very widespread. But
yes. And speaking of viruses and clever people, our final story, MI5 are making non-IT literate staff redundant.
Why IT?
So MI5 is ditching staff.
Wish the MPs would do that.
Well, it's quite interesting. It depends where you read this story, what take you get on it. So if you read it in BBC News, MI5 is ditching staff who lack computer skills in a programme of compulsory and voluntary redundancies. That's their kind of opening statement. If you read it in the Daily Mail, MI5 is making dozens of its older staff redundant as they do not have the computer skills to use social networking sites such as Facebook and Twitter. You complete arseholes, honestly, yeah. Daily Mail. You just make this stuff up.
That's nothing new, though. That's not news, is it?
Exactly.
Daily Mail makes stuff up.
So if you go back to the actual what MI5 said, they never mentioned Facebook or Twitter or social networking. but for some reason, that's what the Daily Mail report.
So Facebook and Twitter seem to be Daily Mail's new Diana.
Pretty much. Oh, I had to bite the tongue there. Sorry, any royalists, but I was about to launch into one. So, yeah, basically, our enemies use every available method to attack, including using technology. We have to be aware of the imminent threats of cyber attacks, and the old generation of MI5 have to be completely comfortable using computers and the latest technology. There's no room now for the old school tie or recruitment from just certain Oxford colleges. So, maybe we'll be joining MI5 soon.
I may already have joined, but hey. Now that I've told you, I'm going to have to kill you.
I've now got visions of you and Jane Bond, but Jane Bond,
Jane Bond, yeah.
Yeah, James Bond, but you're the little guy with the bowler hat.
Which was a shoe, that really hurt.
Sorry. It just popped into my head as soon as you said I might already have joined. Odd job.
come on, we're nearly there. Hold yourself together. We'll be through it soon.
That's class. So
I know what you're going to put in the old the chapter image.
So let's move on to this week's picks.
Should we apologise ahead of time?
What was that?
Should we apologise ahead of time?
What for, the picks?
Yeah,
I think these are the best picks ever. I think we should apologise for this being the longest podcast from two people ever.
Oh, gosh,
apart from when me and Shaq, you probably reviewed some Apple bit at one point and did it for 2 hours.
I hope that I hope people are sensible enough to have broken that down into three chunks.
Anyway, odd job, your pick this week.
So I've put a pick in this week, that one that I keep returning to. I find it incredibly useful, and therefore I'm sure others will as well. But it's an online password generator, pctools.com/guides/password, and it offers you different options as to how strong you want your password to be. So whether you include letters, numbers, uppercase, lowercase, punctuation, and all things like that. And basically, it will generate a list of as many passwords as you want, at any length you want, in a random fashion, which obviously increases the security. It's just a good tool. So that's pctools.com/guides/password. If you're in the business of creating endless databases and user accounts like I am, then it's a good one as a starting point.
Fantastic. Very useful. Especially for anybody in MI5 that might be getting made redundant soon. Point out pctools.com.
They won't know what a web browser is.
But they probably know what Facebook is. My pick, I can't say as useful as that, but it's more fun. It's, it's hipstamatic. It's yet another camera app for the iPhone. I'm tempted to be, I'm going to be lazy. Digital photography never looks so analog. The Hipstamatic brings back the look, feel, unpredictable beauty and fun of plastic toy cameras of the past. The Hipstamatic keeps the quirks of shooting old school, but gives the ability to swap lenses, film and flash settings all within the swipe of a finger. So it's an app for the iPhone. You download it. It shows you a kind of coloured view of what you might get, and if you shake it and you swipe it, you get different effects of the photo you're about to take. But it does make lovely pictures.
Kind of looks like, you know, those photo booths that offer you different options.
Oh, yeah, they're totally like that. And there's some other ones in there. I think there was a... I've got some other apps that do very similar things, but I couldn't resist this because it was getting good ratings. I've deleted them. Camera Bag. So Camera Bag does it as well, and it allows you to pick different kind of coloured effects and different... And, I mean, there's always that school of thought of take the photo and you can add the colour effects later on. But we're on the go and you want a photo and you want to upload it somewhere. It's actually very, very nice. It's 119. 119? 119? It's 119. Only slight little niggle is it's 119, but there's some in-app purchases to actually get.
Yeah, just looking at the little flash intro animation and showing you, well, if you want to buy this lens, it'll cost you some money. That sucks.
Yep. So there's they have standard equipment, which is a number of different lens and film and flashes. And if you want to extend that, it's 99 cents or 59p per lens pack.
No, okay, other than that, it looks quite fun, but that's bugged me.
The app itself...
I guess as a developer...
The app itself is very well written.
It does look slick.
It's very well written. Even just the way you can randomly get a different lens effect, you just kind of shake the app, you know, and you get a different effect. There's a lot of thought has been put into the front end and how it's been written. It is pricey, but I like it.
It's quite fun. Yep.
It is. And that is the end of our rantiest podcast for quite a while. And even then, I don't think we've ranted as we wanted to. You know that?
Oh, I've held back a bit even.
There was so much. There was probably more hate before we started than during.
Yes, they missed out on that bit of joy.
Hate's the wrong word.
Oh, no. I think it's the right word.
If you want to find out more about us, our website is digitaloutbox.com, where you'll find all our previous 43 podcasts. I'm sure you want to download them all and listen to them and read through all the show notes, which take hours and hours and hours to make. We're on Twitter and what's the other one? Oh, yeah, Skype as Digital Outbox. And if you want to email us, info@digitaloutbox.com, and we will answer you promptly and courteously.
Yes.
Odd job. Where can we find out more about you?
ChrisHutchinson.org.uk is my
unused
blog.
You to say oddjob.co.uk.
I nearly wanted to say something like that. Twitter is CheesyUK.
Fantastic. I am at iand.net and I'm on Twitter as Sweeper. I've lost the ability to talk. I'm glad that's going to happen now and not...
And on Chat Roulette as...
I'm just looking up Oddjob. Oh, it's just a domain parking nonsense. I'd have loved it to be something not rude. Anyway, thanks for listening and join us again next week. Goodbye.
Please join us again next week. Yes. Bye.
Please. Happy?
Yeah, you've gone all dark. We've lost the sun in the time that it took to do that.
Pretty much.
It was definitely bright sunlight when we started.
The thing is that if I put the light on, it doesn't, because it's one of these daft energy saving things, it's like... It
takes 10 hours to actually warm
up.
Yeah,
it's like the smallest light ever and it makes me purple.
It does. You have turned purple.